Welcome to Evidence to Excellence, news in neuroplasticity and rehab powered by the Recovery Project. We want to personally welcome and thank you for joining us today. We're glad that you're here because this podcast is designed to keep you updated on what's new in research and evidence in the neurorehabilitation world. Now, here's your host, Polly Swingle, CEO and co-owner of the Recovery Project.
Welcome, everybody, to our next episode of Evidence to Excellence. This is episode number 28, and my name is Polly Swingle, and I am your host today and always on this podcast. So today, and I always say this, that I am like so excited to talk about this, but I am such a technology geek. And as you guys all know, that I have been in the world of rehab now for almost 40 years. And I am loving that there is now technology options out there for individuals that have had a stroke. So today we are going to talk about some new technology. I'm going to call it new technology, a technology called VivaStim. And VivaStim is the first FDA-approved neurostimulator device to pair vagus nerve stimulation with your rehab. Now, that's a lot, but we are going to dive really, really deeply into this so all of our listeners are going to understand the science behind it, are going to understand what that means to have a vagus nerve stimulator, but also talk about the rehab that I'm going to say is necessary and required to have the outcomes that we're going to talk about in using this technology. So before I introduce my guest, I'm going to talk a little bit about some statistics and some background on stroke. So here at the Recovery Project, one of the biggest diagnostic medical groups that we see do fall under stroke. So I went ahead and looked up how many people per year in the United States typically have a stroke. The number that I found was 795,000 people suffer from a stroke. There are really kind of two types of stroke. One is an ischemic stroke and one is a hemorrhagic stroke. Ischemic stroke accounts for about 85% of the strokes that we see, while about 10 to 20% are the hemorrhagic strokes. There are a little bit, 3% or so, that can be categorized under a different type of stroke, but we are not going to talk about that. So just a little bit, if you guys don't know the difference between the two type of strokes, I'll give you a little background. Hemorrhagic stroke can occur when an aneurysm, which is a blood-filled pouch that balloons out from an artery, can rupture. And what happens is that can flood the surrounding tissue with blood. This then can cause damage to our neurons and to our brain tissue. An ischemic stroke, remember, which is the more, I guess, familiar type stroke, is a condition where the blood supply to the brain is blocked by a clot or plaque. So we hear about that kind of stuff all the time. So either one of these strokes can cause brain cells to die. And due to the lack of oxygen and nutrients to those cells, they die. They no longer function. And that can lead to some permanent brain damage or even death. But one thing that we do know now is this thing called neuroplasticity in our brain. And we have done many, many podcasts and talked about neuroplasticity. And we are going to talk about that today. And we're going to talk about the approaches in rehab as well of how to get neuroplasticity. So just to remind our audience that if somebody does have a stroke, there's different parts of the brain that control different parts of our body. The deficits that we tend to commonly see with somebody that has a stroke is paralysis or numbness. And that really typically is on one side of the body. Typically, we see that where the arm, wrist, and hand, as well as the leg, which includes the whole leg, hip, knee, and ankle, can be affected. And remember, that also means kind of that torso, that core, the trunk can also be affected. People that have had a stroke may have difficulty with speaking, not just articulating their speech, but also understanding their speech. There may be visual problems, difficult with swallowing. And again, because of this potential paralysis or weakness, in the lower body, people have mobility issues. Also, there could be some uncoordinated movements, balance deficits, and then if there is an upper extremity involvement, there really can be at times some subluxation of that shoulder, some pain in their shoulder. But the biggest thing is that we use our arms so much for what we do in life, our activities of daily living, of so many things for a quality of life, that this can really, really affect somebody's ability to be independent. So before we go on, one of the things that we typically see when somebody has a stroke, and if they do have that paralysis or that lack of sensation on that one side of their body, is that what we see in rehab is that the recovery tends to be a little bit better in the leg compared to the arm. So I'm a physical therapist, and I completely agree with this statement that we do see that people tend to have movement come back in their leg, definitely quicker than the arm. We tend to have more tone come back into that leg than we do in the arm. We tend to see more function coming back in the leg compared to the arm. And the question is always in our world of science and rehab is, why is that? And we know why. Right now, again, we're going to talk about these principles of neuroplasticity, but if you just think about the first three principles of neuroplasticity, this is why we tend to see a better recovery in the lower extremity. So the first principle is use it or lose it. So think about this. Our legs. We walk on two legs, right? If you're just sitting in a chair, you have weight through both legs. If you've had a stroke and you have to stand up or transfer to get into bed, to get on the commode, you're kind of forced to use the leg. If you're working on walking, yep, you're forced to use the leg that may have been involved with the stroke because we can't just hop and walk on one leg. Now, if you think about the arm, what tends to happen is the principle, use it or lose it, it is so easy for us that if we had involvement from our stroke in our right arm, and we were used to brushing our teeth with our right hand, it is easier, instead of forcing yourself to brush your teeth with your right arm, that we can just say, you know what, forget it, I'm going to use my left hand. So you kind of have this compensation, right? So the second principle is repetitions. So again, as a rehab provider, we're going to talk about this. Repetitions is so important in the legs that if you're working on walking, you're getting those repetitions because it's step, step, step. But with the arm, sometimes that can be more difficult to get the repetition. And then the final thing for neuroplasticity is that intensity matters. When you think of intensity, I always think of it that as I have to put a load or demand on the weak, I'm going to call it extremity. So again, when we use our legs, walking, transferring, standing, scooting, you have that forced use, that load on the leg, which is more difficult with the upper extremity because we don't do a lot of things in life where we're loading the upper extremity. If we crawled around to get around, that would be a different story, but that's not how we function. All right, guys, I'm going to stop talking and we're going to get into this. So today I have with me Mark Pedzawider. Did I say it right? Yes. Who is from VivaStim. And I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell us a little bit about his background. So Mark, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So my name is Mark Pedzawider. I am an occupational therapist by background, and I'm also working with Microtransponder, which is the company, with the VivaStim system as a therapy development specialist. And so basically what that means is I work alongside our therapy partners to help spread education and awareness about the device and technology. I help educate patients as well about this device. And I'm also there for clinical support as the patient's going through their post-op rehab protocol. And so I've been with the company for just about 2 years now, and it's been awesome to see the organic growth it's experienced and all the patients it's helped so far.
All right. So let's just start with the basic questions. Can you tell us about what is it? I gave a little background about the type of strokes, but also kind of share with our audience, what is it, what type of patient would be appropriate for this technology?
Sure. So Vivastim is a medical implant. It is a vagus nerve stimulator. And while vagus nerve stimulation actually is not a new therapy per se, they've been doing it since the late 90s for conditions such as epilepsy and depression. But Vivastim is a paired vagus nerve stimulation therapy. So it's a small implant that gets placed in the patient's upper left chest. And then there's also a lead that gets placed around the patient's left vagus nerve. And so what it basically does is it enhances the effects of neuroplasticity. And so I mentioned before that it's a paired technology, it's a paired device. So the stimulation that's provided from the device needs to get paired with high intense rehab in order to see all the gains that we've seen so far in our studies and also commercially. And so it's a relatively new device. We received FDA approval in 2021, and now we are fully commercially available.
So anybody with a stroke is a candidate, or is it a specific type of stroke?
Yeah, so our indication with the FDA is for chronic ischemic stroke. So chronic, generally being defined as 6 months post-onset. And it's for those still experiencing ongoing upper limb deficits, so weakness, paralysis in their arm and hand. And there is some more nuance to that criteria where we'll get into in a little minute here. But that is the primary indication. Again, chronic ischemic stroke for those experiencing ongoing upper limb deficits.
So I want to get into a little bit of the research and the supporting literature that really supports this type of technology. So can you start sharing that with us of, you know, how did this get FDA approved? I mean, I know through that whole process that we definitely have to have studies and we have to have a lot of support that this is beneficial and safe. So why don't you give us a little bit of that background?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the great things about Vivastim is that we have about, you know, 15 years of really intensive research that went into this, starting with animal models, looking at rats who had a stroke and looking at their forelimb function and rehabilitation, and then ultimately leading up to human trials. And so our pivotal trial was published actually in The Lancet, and for the listeners who are in tune with medical research, The Lancet has one of the highest impact factors out of any medical journal in the world. And what this study did from a methodology perspective was they enrolled 108 participants who were all, again, chronic ischemic stroke survivors. For the sake of the study, they actually defined chronic as being 9 months post-onset because they wanted to make sure that there was no interference at all with spontaneous recovery. A moderate to severe upper extremity impairment was also an inclusion criteria. And what they used to define that was the Fugelmeyer assessment, which is an outcome measure largely used by therapists to basically measure upper extremity impairment. And they looked for a range between 20 and 50 on that scale. After the recruitment period, they implanted all 108 participants with the device. And then all the participants went on to complete the same exact 6 weeks of therapy. It was a triple-blinded randomized controlled trial. Meaning that none of the participants knew which group they belonged to, whether they were in the experimental or the VNS group or the control group. Also, the therapists treating the patients didn't know which group they belonged to, and the assessors didn't know as well. And so they divided the 108 participants into two groups. The control group was receiving fake or sham stimulation. The experimental group or their VNS group was receiving real vagus nerve stimulation throughout the therapy protocol. And so they gave the therapist about six activities to choose from throughout the rehab protocol, which was three times a week for 6 weeks at 90 minutes a session. And after the 6 weeks, they unblinded both the groups. And what they found is that the control group, so the group receiving just therapy alone, did improve a little bit, right? Because we know that therapy in and of itself is mm-hmm. effective. However, when they looked at the results from the experimental group, what they found was that those participants had about a 2 to 3 times greater wow. outcome than the group just receiving therapy. They then looked at the outcomes again 90 days later, and what they found was that Again, the experimental group showed about a 2 to 3 time greater gain than the control group alone, and about a 6-point change on the Fugelmeyer, which was statistically significant.
Wow, you know, that is so impressive because you're an OT, I'm a PT, and as I kind of said in our intro, I think one of the most frustrating aspects of recovery from a stroke is that many patients are like, all right, I got my leg going, I'm walking, but my arm is not doing what I needed to do to swing a golf club again, right? To brush my teeth, to hold a wine glass, whatever that is. And we always hear that. And I think I've been practicing for a very long time, and that always has been such a struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. And as an OT, I worked in both the inpatient setting, the acute care setting, and outpatient setting. So I got to see and work with stroke survivors along the continuum of recovery. And when I was working in outpatient, it was always a very frustrating and difficult conversation to have with patients, right, when they were experiencing that quote-unquote plateau.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to have a realistic conversation with them that, you know, they may no longer see any meaningful return in that arm or hand. And when I heard about Vivastim, it was kind of a breath of fresh air because there was finally something for these patients to try once they reach that plateau phase.
Yeah.
And so that's also the really exciting thing about Vivastim is that we're really not interfering or working with patients when they're still in that subacute phase, when they can still experience the spontaneous recovery.
Right.
We're only working with patients when they've stopped seeing those meaningful returns, which, again, typically happens around the 6-month mark.
And I think our, you know, what's so nice about doing a podcast like this is sending that message out to other healthcare providers. So a lot of the time when they get to that stage, they're no longer maybe being seen by their rehab doctor, or some of them aren't even in therapy. So they just go off and they don't know about this option for them. So hopefully we can go out and reach, you know, the primary care doctors, the internists that see these patients after this period of time to say, hey, maybe this option is for you, and this is how or who you contact to look further into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of my job is speaking with patients who are interested in Vivastim. And, you know, one kind of disheartening thing I've learned through this job is that there's plenty of patients who I talked to that haven't done any sort of outpatient therapy. They didn't even know it was a choice for them. And so helping them get reintegrated into the healthcare system and, you know, go back to their physicians and ask for more recommendations of what they can do to improve their condition has been a very meaningful part of my role. Again, just giving them another shot for recovery.
Right, right. I'm going to hold off on the insurance question, but I want to – so what I'm hearing you say is there's a process. You said earlier that right now a potential candidate has to score between a 20 and a 50 in the Fugelmeyer. Tell us a little bit about the Fugelmeyer. Like, what does that mean, a 20, or what does that mean, a 50? Like, what kind of movement are you looking for?
Yeah, so I think I should first start off by saying that the reason, or part of the reason we're requiring that 20 to 50 scale is because we're trying to stay as congruent as possible to what we did in our clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the same patients are being treated commercially as they were in our studies.
Okay.
And so again, the Fugelmeyer is basically the gold standard to look at changes in upper extremity impairment. And so what a 20 to 50 score range really means typically is that these patients tend to have at least some residual movement in their affected arm and hand. And so what we typically say is a patient in this range can usually get their arm or their hand to a tabletop position without using their unaffected side to help them. And they typically have some residual movement of their thumb and one additional digit. So by and large, I feel like those are some of the criteria that would indicate the patient would fall between a 20 and 50 on the Fugelmeyer.
So is there a process if a patient, caregiver, a physician, a therapist is listening to this and like, oh my gosh, I have this, I'm thinking of this patient that I treated. What should they do? So it sounds like kind of the first step is they need a Fugelmeyer.
Yes.
To make sure. So go ahead, tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, the process kind of differs depending on the location the patient lives in, what health system they're working with. But if a provider has a patient in mind, they could always reach out to us directly on our website, vivistem.com. They can put in their information and somebody from our company will reach out to them.
Okay.
But for, let's say, a more established system that we're currently working with, the process usually goes where the patient is first either identified by a physician or a therapist that, to your point, thinks that might be a good candidate. They then go on to complete either a PT or an OT evaluation like they normally would, with a few additional criteria added to that evaluation, with one being the Fugelmeyer. And I guess I should elaborate more on the Fugelmeyer. With basically, the scale is 0 to 66, with a higher score indicating less impairment. So a 66 is essentially a perfect score. So again, it's usually the OT or the PT to administer the Fugelmeyer, seeing if they fall within that range. But we also look for a few other things as well, or we encourage the clinician to look for a few other things. Motivation is very important.
Yeah.
So like I said earlier, this is a paired technology. And when I talk to therapists and I talk to patients, I oftentimes like to remind them, like, why does therapy by itself work? What makes it effective? And it's all these things you already mentioned, right? How do we elicit neuroplasticity? Mm-hmm. It's by doing a high number of repetition with tasks that are meaningful to the patient and doing that over and over again, right? And then when you pair those high reps and all that hard work with VNS, that's when you see those incremental gains, right? So patient motivation is very important. And then aside from that, we also look at or encourage the clinician to look at some other considerations, such as the logistics of the patient getting to and from the clinic, which are things that are typically covered in the OTPT evaluation anyways.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
I was going to say from there, the OTPT will then send their documentation to the surgeon who implants these devices to say, you know, whether or not they feel like this patient is a good functional candidate. From there, from a more fundamental level, the surgeon will also do their assessment of the patient to make sure they're a good surgical candidate. And then they'll move on to either scheduling their surgery if the patient wants to proceed with Medicare, because Medicare, there is no prior auth required.
Nice.
If the patient has a commercial insurance, they then have to go through the prior auth period, just like most other procedures.
Okay. So right now, can any OT or PT evaluate the patient, or do you have certain ones in certain areas that you're recommending for these patients?
So we do have like select partners in any given market or territory that go through a training with our company. They do like an online training class where they do receive like a certificate of completion afterwards. We also help with like in-person training, getting them familiarized with our technology. And then we're actually there in person. Somebody from our team, usually from our clinical team, is there for the first few sessions with the patient to actually turn the device on, set the parameters, and help them basically get set up through their rehab protocol.
Great. I know that we, the Recovering Project, are one of those partners. I mean, that's what we do. I know when we heard about this and I was talking to Mark, I was like, this is kind of what we do every single day, and it makes sense because we utilize all the principles of neuroplasticity and we really know how to provide that intensity of the rehab that is needed for somebody that does choose to go ahead and get this device. If somebody is in Michigan and they go through, you know, they're interested in doing this, and they go through like, they're like, oh my God, I think my arm is moving in those ranges that you talked about. Do you help them kind of tell who's doing this, the surgeons that are doing it in their area?
Yeah. So if a patient contacts us through our website, we will help them navigate where to go, you know, what physicians, what clinicians are currently partnered with us, and we can help them get through that process. So again, it depends on where the patient lives in Michigan. If they're on the eastern half of the state or the western half of the state, we try to help them get to a rehab location that's close to them, because again, the rehab protocol is 3 times a week for 6 weeks. But we also are somewhat selective on the rehab partners that we work with, right? So that's the awesome thing about the Recovery Project, is that you all very much embody the same values and mission that we have as a company, where really providing high quality and intensive rehab for your patients.
You might not know this because I know that you, your territory is Michigan and Chicago?
Chicago, part of Wisconsin, and also part of Minnesota.
Okay. So is this available throughout the United States? Because we get listeners from all over.
So it's not available in the entire U.S. quite yet.
Okay.
It's mostly in the larger cities,
okay,
some of the coastal cities. So just to name a few, Chicago, like I already mentioned, what we call the upper Midwest. So Detroit, Grand Rapids, Milwaukee, and then basically Minneapolis, Rochester, Minnesota. And then when we look at the coastal cities, we have like Los Angeles, we have Phoenix, Dallas, Houston, Austin, mostly the whole state of Florida, the Southeast, and then most of the East Coast is covered now.
Nice, nice. And that will continue to grow.
Yeah,
as more people learn about this, for sure, for sure. So whoever's listening, wherever you live, reach out on the website and we absolutely can help you find those providers and a surgeon in your area. So let me ask a few more questions about the implant itself. Are there side effects?
Yeah, so this is a, you know, a very common question we get from patients and providers. And again, it's important to keep in mind that this procedure per se is not a new procedure because, again, VNS has been an established therapy since the late 90s, and they've done over 150,000 implants at this point in time. So the procedure itself is about 30 to 90 minutes. It's an outpatient basis procedure, and it involves two incisions, again, one with the placement of the battery in the patient's upper left chest, and then they make another small incision in the patient's left neck to gain access to the actual vagus nerve where the lead and the coil sits on. Now, in terms of side effects in our clinical trials, we did have one patient with an adverse reaction, which was a temporary vocal cord paresis that did spontaneously kind of resolve itself after a few weeks. But otherwise, you know, the typical side effects you would see are just like any other procedure, some pain around the incision site, maybe some bruising, some swelling. But that's really about it.
Can a patient feel it? Like, can they feel, I guess, the battery? And then also the second part of that question, can they feel it when it's being stimulated, the vagus nerve?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on the patient's body composition as to whether or not they'll actually feel the implant in their left chest. Maybe a more slimmer patient might be able to feel it or see it. But again, it's pretty small. The implant itself is, you know, easily fits in the palm of your hand.
Okay.
In terms of feeling the stimulation, this also kind of varies from patient to patient. And this was part of the reason why they're able to control so well in our study is because the stimulation is typically sub-threshold. We try to keep all of our patients at an amplitude of about 0.8 milliamps. And for other VNS devices, they're sometimes double that amplitude. So it's a pretty small or a pretty subtle dosage of stimulation. And again, most patients don't really feel anything. If they feel the stimulation, it's usually like a slight flicker or tickle in their throat is what they report.
And then how do you, so is it on all the time? Like how is it turned on, I guess?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about the protocol and really what goes on with that. So because it's a paired therapy, the device is only on when the patient is doing therapy in the clinic. We also have another function where the patient can turn their device on at home by way of a magnet that we provide to them. So again, I don't want to belabor this, but the protocol is 3 times a week for 6 weeks with 18 sessions at least. And what basically happens is when the patient is doing all of these plasticity promoting activities and exercises with the therapist is pressing a button to deliver a stimulation of vagus nerve stimulation. That impulse then goes into the brain and causes a general release of different neuromodulators, mm-hmm. which are basically chemicals that are all very plasticity promoting. Then those neuromodulators will interact with the motor neurons that are firing as the patient is doing their therapy, and it's helping them kind of create a new neuronal network or helping those neurons rewire themselves around the damaged part of the brain more effectively and efficiently than just therapy alone. Okay, so again, it's on during therapy, and then when the patient goes home, they have the ability to turn their device on again by just swiping over their implant with a magnet. It will turn it on for a 30-minute period, and it will send a stimulation every 10 seconds. Now, what's important about this, though, is that the patient must be doing something active and functional, right? So we don't want the patient to turn the device on and take a nap or watch their favorite TV show. We want them to be engaged either in their home exercise program or just doing something they want to get better at, right? Their morning ADL routine.
Absolutely.
You know, we have clinicians oftentimes encouraging patients to turn the device on when they're getting ready in the morning, when they're brushing their teeth, when they're playing with their grandkids. Really anything they want to improve upon, it's a great time for them to use their device.
And it sounds like there's a safety mechanism in there where somebody can't like overstimulate themselves.
Yeah, right? No, exactly. So it's 30-minute periods. It will turn off automatically. And the patient only has the ability to turn it on up to 8 times a day, which does provide 4 hours of therapy. And what's also cool for the therapist listening is that we can cross-reference how many times the patient turns their device on at home. So we all have these, you know, sometimes interesting conversations with patients about HEP compliance.
Right.
And we can now track to see if the self-reporting is congruent with what they're actually doing.
That's wonderful. Because as you know, doing this forever, we hear one story and it's not always the complete truth.
Yeah. And I will say, though, is that Vivisin patients, again, because they're usually almost hyper-motivated, we don't have a whole lot of problem with compliance with the HEP.
So can the device be removed if somebody is interested in removing it? Or is this something that just stays in forever?
Yeah, so, you know, because our device is not like an on-off mechanism, meaning that we don't turn this on, they start seeing their arm moving better immediately. Again, it's creating an actual change in the brain over time when you pair the stimulation with therapy. So the battery life is at least 5 years. And once the battery dies, the patient is basically left with 3 options. They can leave the device in if it's not bothering them. They can remove it or explant it. Or they can replace the battery.
Okay.
Now, the question we get as a follow-up oftentimes is, well, if the battery dies or they remove it, do they lose all the gains they made, you know, with all their hard work? And the answer is no, because, again, the change is happening centrally in the brain. So, you know, theoretically, those changes should persist. But the principles of use it or lose it still apply.
Yep.
So the patient has to continue using their arm and hand and their daily life to maintain those gains.
Yeah, I love that. So let's talk a little bit about therapy. I know that we are going to be providing this therapy here in the Metro Detroit area for individuals that have gotten the implant. And again, it's 3 times a week for 6 weeks for at least 90 minutes. So we're going to set it up that the patient that has this implant will be seeing PT and OT for an hour. So they're going to get a little bit more. But when we started this and we're talking to you, Mark, we met with our OT and our PT staff because we were talking like, okay, let's make sure, guys, we want the repetitions. We want that intensity. We want to make sure that the activities that the patient is doing in therapy is something that they're familiar with. It's something that they're interested in. If it's gardening, if it's mechanics, if it's housework, if it's ADL, if it's a sport, golfing, whatever that is, that's going to be incorporated in their therapy. So we've been talking about that. So for therapists out there listening, and maybe you're an OT, one of the first things was upper extremity, because sometimes, and I'm going to say this, and I'm a PT, that sometimes it's kind of like the OTs, you're going to take care of the upper extremity and do all of that. And the PTs, we're going to work on mobility. Now, our staff here was a little excited about that because we can do even more, meaning that we may be working on some very dynamic mobility activities in PT incorporating the upper extremity. So maybe it is literally swinging a pickleball paddle and hitting the ball as you are working on your mobility dynamically, or doing sweeping or mopping or housework and utilizing that affected upper extremity, not just from sitting down or sitting at a chair, but really utilizing that whole body movement. And again, that neuroplasticity, building those new pathways, will happen so much quicker. So I'm just so excited about this technology. And I know that our therapists just love that ability that they can be so creative
Yeah, absolutely.
Within their sessions.
Yes.
And really looking at, like, asking that therapist, what is it that you miss doing right now, or is that difficult? And really designing that treatment session to really do all of those activities.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the one thing about our protocol, is that it's not necessarily super prescriptive, meaning, like, we don't prescribe what you should be doing in those sessions. What we encourage is that you incorporate the patient's goals into all the treatment activities. And because it's so focused on high repetition, you might be doing 5 or 6 different activities in that 90-minute or 2-hour session, really focused on things the patient wants to do. So to your point, right, it takes more than just arm function to swing a golf club.
Right.
And you might be out, you know, on a nice day swinging a tennis racket or something. But it's really all the activities in the protocol should be very focused on the upper extremity and also on things the patient wants to improve upon.
Right, right. So I know some patients out there, even therapists, so after the 6 weeks, is that it? Or is it up to the therapy team that's working with that patient saying, you know what, let's continue a little bit longer, or you go off and do your HEP or do these activities at home? What are you seeing out there in the industry?
Yeah, I'd say it's, you know, it always kind of depends on the patient and the therapist and how they want to proceed after that 6 weeks. But what I've seen so far is, you know, we're talking about chronic stroke patients who are finally seeing some improvements in their arm and hand for the first time, sometimes in years.
Yeah.
Again, that's the other cool thing, is that, you know, we don't have an upper limit in terms of the chronicity we can work with. We've worked with patients who are well beyond 10 years from their initial onset of stroke. And so when they're finally seeing these gains, they don't usually want to stop at 6 weeks. They want to keep going. And so what usually happens is they don't follow the same frequency and duration of 3 times a week for 6 weeks. 3 times a week for 90-minute sessions. They might come in twice a week for an hour, or 3 times a week for 45 minutes. While they're still doing their HEP. So again, really depends on the patient, the therapist, but I'm all for doing more. So if the patient can do it and the therapist can do it as well, why not continue on?
Yeah, and I think, you know, to share with the audience is that we know now that neuroplasticity can happen for the rest of your life. So there isn't that window that we used to hear years ago, like, this is it, you got this window, you better work really hard because after that, that's kind of it. And that is not the case, because now we know that those new pathways can continue to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we did see that exact thing happening in our pivotal trial in The Lancet, because our control group did improve, which is therapy alone. But of course, it was the therapy plus VNS, which allowed them to see even more gains.
Do you have some maybe objective information of the sort of improvements that you saw in the studies?
I do. And, you know, we did, just like any other study, we relied on outcome measures to track those changes, with the two primary outcome measures being the Fugelmeyer assessment, which I already talked about, and then the Wolf motor function test. And what I can say is that while the control group did improve a little bit, it was really the VNS group that saw the clinically meaningful changes on both the Wolf motor function test and the Fugelmeyer, which the predetermined clinically meaningful change in the Fugelmeyer was about 5.2.
Wow.
And our patients in the experimental group saw almost a 6-point change. And then what's really cool is that in the Lancet study, they were able to cross the control group over. So the group that was receiving just the therapy and not the VNS for the first 6 weeks, they then had their device turned on to receive the actual VNS therapy, and they showed the same exact improvements as the original VNS group.
Wow. Wow. That point difference really correlates to function.
It does.
And that's what is so incredible, that the patient is going to see this. I'm all about function and quality of life, and they are going to see a difference. That is wonderful. And so your study was 6 weeks long.
So it was 6 weeks of the intensive in-clinic therapy. And then we did follow up 90 days later when they can do their exercises at home. And so we did track the outcome measures at those two time points. We also have a new study that was recently published that looks at the long-term durability to see if those gains persist. And what we found, again, is as long as patients continue to use their arm and hand, those gains do persist up to 3 years out.
Wow. And I'm sure you guys are going to keep an eye on that as we see more and more patients getting this device. It just goes to say you got to use it or you're going to lose it. Repetitions matter. I mean, we keep saying this. It is the basic principles of neuroplasticity. And you just got to really, once they start seeing function, though, I really think the patients even have that, more of that motivation that I am going to use my arm because now I get it. If I incorporate it in what I do every single day, that I'm going to see this change with this device.
For sure. And it tends to be kind of a snowball effect,
yeah.
Right? Because they start to have more function returning where then they can more organically incorporate their arm into daily activities. And once they start seeing those changes, they typically want to do more and more.
So let's talk a little bit about just Michigan, since I'm in Michigan and I'm selfishly want to know this information. So our therapists that live in Michigan that are listening to this, our patients and caregivers, who's implanting the device?
Yeah, so from an implanting perspective, we do have options on both, again, the eastern half and the western half of the state. Here locally in Detroit, we've been working with the Corwell System, and Dr. Fernando Diaz is the implanting physician. On the western half of the state, more towards Grand Rapids area, there's actually two implanting physicians, Dr. Sanjay Patra and also Dr. Hayden Boyce are both implanting physicians.
Then what about the rehab facilities that you partner with? Is that kind of all over the Metro Detroit area, or right now do you have just a few and also on the west side of the state?
Yeah, so of course we're working with you all with the Recovery Project.
Yep.
And then we're also working with Corwell's own rehab team.
Perfect.
And then in the more western half of the state, it's again mostly the Corwell Health System and their rehab team we're working with.
Wonderful. And again, everybody, we're going to give you our information on how to contact either myself, us, or Mark as you're starting to absorb all of this information and you're interested of how to go ahead and maybe get a patient referred for this type of technology or you yourself getting a little bit more information. Before we finish up, anything else that I didn't ask that you'd like to share with our audience?
No, I think we covered most of it. I will like to also say that our website has some phenomenal resources. So vivastim.com, we have a great, what's called like an ambassador program. So for stroke survivors who want to learn more about this, they can actually speak to a Vivastim patient, a patient who has already been implanted, has gone through their therapy to learn more about their unique perspective with the technology, with their gains, with the protocol. And it's just an incredible program that we have as a company.
So it sounds like definitely go to your website is kind of the first stop. Get more information. I know that there is because I've been on it, but a contact, if you want things, you can fill that out and somebody from your company will absolutely reach out.
Yeah, so they'll see like a contact us section. They can fill out their information and then somebody from our team will help them get connected with a local representative.
Perfect, perfect. And then us guys, I'm just going to share with you, if you want more information on the Recovery Project, and again, we can help you since we are providing the therapy for individuals that have received this device, that we can also connect you at that beginning stages of how to get more information on Vivastim. Our website is therecoveryproject.net, again, N-E-T.net. But also, if you're following us on our social networks, Facebook, Instagram, we do share a lot of information on Vivastim on that as well as on our website. We have information so we can help you get connected. Anything else, Mark, you want to share, or we covered everything?
I think we're good. Yeah, again, for more information, vivastim.com. We're also active on social media, LinkedIn, Instagram. But if anyone's interested, fill out the contact us information and somebody will reach out.
Perfect. So listeners, Mark and I were talking before we started that I think what we're going to do in about 6 months, we're going to do a follow-up. I'm going to bring Mark back in. Would love to also have a patient that went through this process that can share with you guys their experience. So more to come. I want to thank you all for continuing to listen to this podcast and we'll see you all next time. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's Evidence to Excellence News in Neuroplasticity and Rehab podcast. We appreciate you and hope that you come back every fourth Tuesday of the month to get more of what's new in evidence and research in the neurorehabilitation world. To learn more about the Recovery Project or to find out what we're up to next, you can visit us anytime at therecoveryproject.net.